Tim Kirkshin, there is nobody on this planet I would rather talk to today than you. Today is kind of like the keystone of the sports calendar. It is opening day, and you, Tim, you know more about baseball and love baseball more than any human being I've ever known. So given everything it took just to get here, what does today feel like for you?
Well, I love baseball, Pablo. I've covered every opening day since 1979. And even though I covered an opening day last year from home with every technological problem you can possibly imagine, it is a miracle we did the Dodger-Giants game last year on opening day. I made 1,000 mistakes. I kept running into Ravi. I kept running into Eduardo on the air. It was a block or a charge. I think it was a charge every time on me. It was terrible. And this year, I'll be doing a game instead of at Yankee Stadium, which saddens me to no end. I'll be doing it from the studio, sitting next to Carl Ravitch, so that'll make it so much better, and it'll be much better than watching the World Series last year from the ESPN cafeteria, which was just not the same as watching it from, say, Dodger Stadium or anywhere else. So I'll take what I can get, Pablo. I get to cover a big league game. I get to broadcast a big league game. Nothing is better than that in this stage of life for me. So I'll take it from my room, from the studio, from the cafeteria. I don't care.
It has been a long 13 months or so for all of us. And I know things aren't back to quote-unquote normal, but today does get us a little step closer. Because baseball is back. And that's real baseball, by the way. 162 games, and at least some fans in the stands right at the start. And nobody is more excited about all of this than our very own Tim Kirkshin. Today, Tim will get you up to speed after a very eventful offseason. But even more importantly, I just want you to enjoy what it sounds like when one person loves anything this much. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, April 1st. This is ESPN Daily. Tim Kirkshin, I don't think of myself as a gotcha journalist, but I do feel obligated to ask you about an allegation that one of our guests made about you recently. It was an allegation from Jeff Passan. And Jeff Passan had overslept through our entire scheduled interview, and he blamed it on crashing from too much Diet Mountain Dew.
Literally slept through not one alarm, two alarms. I set a backup alarm because I don't trust myself. And still, the power of the Diet Mountain Dew still could not get me through it. I blame Tim Kirkshin. His elixir of the gods was simply not enough.
Tim Kirkshin is your gateway drug, is what you're saying to us.
No, Tim Kirkshin is my dealer.
So, Tim, the question is simple. Are you Jeff Passan's Diet Mountain Dew dealer?
Yeah, I drink way too much of it. I'm the only sports writer on the face of the earth who's never had a cup of coffee. So I drink.
Wow.
I drink a Diet Mountain Dew every morning. It's the greatest thing ever. I read the box scores in the morning and I drink a Diet Mountain Dew. That's what I do. Now, I'm trying to cut back. I'm down to two a day. And I used to be way higher than that, but I'm trying to get better about everything in my life. I'm 64, I'm 5'4, I weigh 140 pounds, so I'm trying to do better and stay healthier, but I can tell you there is nothing, and I mean nothing better than a Diet Mountain Dew in my box scores every morning.
Tim, your body is clearly a miracle of modern science, but more importantly, I do want to say this, so is your brain, which is crammed full of all sorts of baseball information. So before we just start downloading all the contents of the Kirkshin hard drive, I do want to zoom out a bit. What are you looking forward to most overall this season?
Well, number one, I'm looking forward to 162 games, Pablo, because once you play 162, even under adverse conditions, then it's a real major league season. Last year was great. We got through it. Everything was fine. But 60 is not 162. But there are a million great stories out there. I mean, how much better are the Padres than they were last year when they made the playoffs? I mean, how good are the White Sox, even without Eloy Jimenez, who's going to miss the season? How much fun are they going to be to watch? What about the Blue Jays? How much better are they? And how are they going to adjust to playing 2 weeks in Dunedin, Florida, and then figuring out where to go next? Probably Buffalo. Will they go back to Toronto? I mean, these are all fascinating stories, and there are hundreds of them, and that's why we're all looking forward to it.
So I want to spin around the league with you, Tim, in a little bit here, but before we get to the specifics of some of those storylines and those subplots that you just mentioned, I want to talk about the other enormous change from last year, which is fans back in the stands finally. Every team will have some fans to start the season, DC and Boston at the low end at 12% capacity. The Texas Rangers will be at the high end with 100%. So how big of a difference do you think that's going to make compared to what we had last year?
It's an enormous difference. I think we all learned last year the value of having fans in the stands, the atmosphere they create, the energy that they bring, the ambiance that it sets up. If 2,000 people are in the stands, like we saw in spring training, it's not a big crowd, but it's way better than nothing. That silence is just deafening, and it's terrible. Mike Yastrzemski of the Giants told me this spring, he said, it was really weird just standing in the outfield last year with no sounds. And he goes, because you can't hear anything, all sorts of things start to go through your head. And he said, that's the mental part of the game we've never had to deal with is the demons in your head that you can now actually hear, that you can actually listen to, because you can't hear the crowd because there is no crowd. So the bottom line is, whether we have 5,000, 10,000, or 50,000 at a game, it's going to be demonstrably better than it was last year when we had no fans until the postseason.
The sounds of the game will absolutely be different. Major League Baseball, Tim, is also trying to do some surgery on the game itself. And I'm referring to the fact that MLB is reportedly very slightly deadening the baseballs this year to sort of deal with the surge of home runs that the game has become known for. What have you heard about that? And what did the players see in spring training, maybe?
Well, I talked to a bunch of players about this, and half didn't see any difference at all. And the other half thought, yeah, I can tell there's a difference. It's not quite as lively. And the way it's been explained to us from Major League Baseball officials is a baseball that would normally travel 400 feet is now going to travel 399 or 398. So it's not an enormous deadening of the ball, but I think it needs to happen. I think we have way too many homers, which lead, of course, to way too many walks and way too many strikeouts. And that's the problem with the game today. It's like the NBA. We have too many dunks, too many threes, and not enough in between. That's exactly what baseball is going through. So maybe if we deaden the ball a little bit, that pixie little middle infielder who's never hit 10 homers in a season, now has 20 in a season, he's looking around going, I can go deep. But now if he senses the ball is not traveling like it used to, maybe I need to adjust. I need to hit the ball on the ground somewhere. I need to hit the ball to the opposite field. And most important, I need to put the ball in play more often. So I'm hoping by deadening the ball even a little bit, some of our little guys will say, all right, I got to change my approach. And then maybe that will lead to more balls in play, more action, which is exactly what baseball needs.
The other way that baseball seems to be trying to get to that point as well is the foreign substance regulations that are coming down. And they're talking about, the league office is talking about even analyzing spin rate on pitchers using high-speed cameras to help identify suspects and track down offenders. What effect do you think that's going to have?
Well, I think it's going to be impossible to police this. A couple of years ago, I had a major league manager tell me, Tim, every catcher in the big leagues has pine tar on his body somewhere. Remember, Yadier Molina got hit the chest protector with a baseball and it stuck.
And he strikes out Caesar. Molina trying to find the ball, and it's connected to his chest protector. I have never seen that.
How about that?
Like it was, I was ridiculous. So every catcher, I'm told, has something on his shin guard. So when he catches the ball from the pitcher, he can just take it out, rub it up against the shin guard, and throw it back to the pitcher. Eduardo Perez told us a couple days ago, he said, you remember when the catcher used to go to the mound all the time and the pitcher puts his hand on the catcher's like shoulder just to say, yeah, I got this. What he's doing, he's actually reaching and getting some substance off of the catcher's shoulder. So I'm all for it. I just don't know how you're going to police it. These are baseball players. They've been cheating for 150 years. They're going to hide it somewhere. I just don't think it's going to work.
So, Tim, I want to unscuff your crystal ball here now, because there are so many stories that I want the listener to get caught up on around baseball. And I want to start in the AL West, because speaking of cheating and its moral conundrums, the Houston Astros are there, and it feels like fans never really got to reckon with what they did and how they won and how they were punished because of COVID last year and the lack of fans at most ballparks. So the idea that the Astros are going to be on the road now and they're going to be facing opponents in this new context, are they going to hear it from fans? And also, like, connected to all of that, is this still the team that might be the best in the West?
It's really interesting how they dodged one last year. And I got a text from somebody who was at a spring training game this year, and there was a security guard working the game who banged a trash can for an entire at-bat for Alex Bregman. The entire at-bat, he had a cover of a trash can, and he was slamming it. He's a security guy working at the ballpark. I couldn't believe it. So, yes, this is what I think the Astros will be up against. It's not going to be as violent as it would have been if it were last year and there were fans in the stands. It's not that people have forgotten, but we've moved on from it to some degree. But for the rest of their careers, they're going to hear about this. People are going to look at them and say, all right, they did something here. But look, the Astros are a really good team. I could see them winning the division. The A's, I think, are better than they are. And the Astros have some pitching issues with injuries at the moment. But their lineup, even without George Springer, is pretty darn good. And they made the playoffs last year. And they think they have another chance to make it this year.
So moving to the AL Central now. The team that is jumping out at me, Tim, is the White Sox, because they went back to the future this offseason. They went and hired Tony La Russa as their manager at age 76. So you've had some time to process that hire. You've had some time to think about how good that team is going to be under La Russa. What does all of that look like to you now?
Well, I think the White Sox are really good. They are young. They are athletic. They're dynamic in every way. They have hard throwers. They have tremendous everyday lineup. They're going to miss Eloy Jimenez for the season, and they're going to have to figure out left field with several options now. I think they're the best team in the Central. I think they're going to the playoffs, and I think they have a little swag to them led by Tim Anderson that is really impressive. I love watching them play. If I could watch any game tonight, it would be the White Sox and the Padres. They are your two most exciting teams in the big leagues. Now, as for Tony La Russa, look, I'm in the minority on this. I think he's going to do fine. Okay, he's a Hall of Fame manager. I've never met a more competitive manager in my life. How many times, Pablo, including the other day, have I asked him, how you doing? And he says, well, I'll tell you in 3.5 hours. Like, that's when he'll know the outcome of the game, you know, because everything revolves around did we win or lose? And he's also the master psychologist. He's brilliant. He knows everybody's button on his team, when to push it, and how to push it at what time. And he'll get through to the young guys, even though he's 50 years, if not 55 years older than some of the guys on his team. But I just have a feeling he's going to figure this out. But even if he doesn't, that team is so good, they can play through if Tony is not up to this. But I think he is.
So in the East, Tim, I got to ask you about the Yankees, because their offseason was quiet. They re-signed DJ LeMahieu. They picked up Corey Kluber, the 2-time Cy Young winner who hasn't played in about 2 years because of injuries. But, you know, they were beaten out by the Rays last year, by the Tampa Bay Rays. And when you look at that division right now, you look at the AL East, how is it all shaping up to you?
Well, there are three really good teams in that division, and I think it's this order, the Yankees, the Rays, and the Blue Jays, and the Red Sox are going to be much better. I think the Yankees are the best team. Their bullpen's really good. Even though Zach Britton's hurt, he'll be back. Their offense is a joke. And even without Luke Voit, who'll be back in May, they're going to score a million runs and they're going to hit 300 homers if we play 162 games. The big key is Jameson Taillon. Is he ready after he's missed basically 2 years? And Corey Kluber. If those guys are really good and Luis Severino comes back in July and you already got Garrett Cole, suddenly your pitching is awfully good. But if it all falls apart, they could have trouble winning the division. The Rays, who lost two big pitchers, they could still move forward. And the Blue Jays are young, athletic. They're really exciting to watch. And even though they lost their closer, Kirby Yates, and George Springer is going to start the year maybe on the DL, they've got some issues. But that's a three-team race, and all three of those teams, I think, are capable of winning the division.
So now I need to mention the other team that you did not mention, the Baltimore Orioles, because, Tim, you are our Baltimore correspondent. You're a Maryland native. Look, depending on the projections that you may have seen, the Orioles have somewhere between a 1 to 0% chance of making the postseason this year, but you managed to find silver linings in every single franchise. So what should Baltimore Orioles fans look forward to this season?
Well, there's really not much, sorry, but not to be corny about this, but the comeback of Trey Mancini, the first baseman, is just remarkable. Pablo, he had cancer and he got through it. He missed the 60-game season last year and he fought his way back. He's a great kid. He's kind of a local kid. So when he takes his first at-bat at Camden Yards and tips his cap to that crowd, that'll bring a tear to your eyes given what he's been through. So there's your silver lining for a team that is at 0 or 1%.
All right, Tim, coming up, I want to dive in on the National League because there are a lot of good, good players who have changed teams in the offseason.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Tim, when we talk about the big moves of this past offseason and how big of an impact they're all going to have this season, we got to start here with New York and the Mets and Francisco Lindor, who got traded from the Indians to the Mets back in January, the big, fancy new acquisition for billionaire owner Steve Cohen. Does all of this make the Mets legitimate contenders, Tim? Are you willing to bring Mets fans' hopes to that level?
Yes, I think they're going to the playoffs this year. I think they're good enough to win the division. I've got them as a wild card team. And if they make the playoffs after the way they played last year, that's a big step forward. Now, they also got Carlos Carrasco in that trade. And if he gets healthy, he's their number two starter. So they did more than Lindor, but Lindor is enough. Pablo, this guy is so good. He's a switch hitter who can hit leadoff or hit third for you. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and he can steal a base for you. He is a premier defensive shortstop that is going to solidify that infield defense tremendously. He plays with so much energy. That smile never leaves his face. In fact, a few years ago, when one of his buddies, Chris Jimenez, was pitching for the Indians at like an 18-0 loss, Jimenez's first pitch was at like 58 miles an hour. You could throw 58 miles an hour. And Lindor is out there laughing his ass off at shortstop because it was such a funny moment. And instead of saying, I can't smile, we're down 18-0, the game was over and a catcher was pitching. So that's who he is. And he will light up that Citi Field every night with that smile, but he will light it up way more with that backhand in the hole and that bullet he hits to right center field. He is such a good player and great in the clubhouse.
I'd like to think, Tim, that I could crack 59, maybe, but it'd be close. It'd be close. Where's your arm at, by the way? What did you top out at, miles per hour?
Well, as long as you asked, I threw off the mound for the first time since high school, and I threw my age. I was 63 at the time. I'm not proud of this, and I'm embarrassed by this, but I was able to throw a pitch my age. And it begs the question, at what age do you get where you can no longer throw your age? You know, we talk about whether you can shoot your age in golf. 75-year-old guy shoots 75. That's amazing. I think it's harder to throw your age when you get to 60 years old, because if you don't know, if you haven't thrown off a mound lately, 60 isn't as low as it sounds.
Tim, what was the action on that pitch, though? What was the movement on it like?
Oh, I just cut it. I just cut it just a little bit so I could get that down and away action on it and keep the right-handed hitters off of it. Look, I just threw it as hard as I could, and I don't even know if it was near the strike zone. It didn't matter. I had to hit something that was as big as a tarpaulin back there. That's all I had to do. It wasn't a strike. I just threw it as hard as I can, and I haven't raised my shoulder since, so that was about 4 months ago.
So, Tim, I want to move on to an arm that the New York Mets tried to get but didn't, an arm that may help shape the National League West, because in the craziest free agent sweepstakes I think we saw this year, Trevor Bauer, the NL Cy Young winner, ends up on the world champion Dodgers, just the rich getting yet richer. How much better does Trevor Bauer make the team that was already the best in the big leagues last year?
Yeah, they were clearly the best team in the big leagues last year. And here's how good their pitching was, Pablo. Their ERA was 3.02. The next best in the National League was the Reds at 3.84. Mm. That 0.82 difference was the greatest gap in history between number one in the league in ERA and number two. They were almost a run better than anyone else. And now they get David Price back, and they get the Cy Young winner from the National League. So you can make a case, not only do they have the best seven-man rotation in baseball, which is clear, they have the best, at least based on last year, they might have the best one, the best two, the best three, the best four, the best five, the best six, and the best seven starting pitchers in the game. And they have a decent bullpen. They hit more homers than any team in baseball, and they have a great defense. That's why they are the prohibitive favorites, not just to win another division, but to win the World Series again.
So what the Padres are doing in response to that, as they're part of the arms race, they add Blake Snell, they add Yu Darvish, they re-sign Fernando Tatis Jr. to this enormous 14-year deal. Do they have a shot to challenge the prohibitive favorites in the NL West?
Yes, this is baseball, Pablo. Teams have a shot, whereas they didn't have a shot, bad teams going into Chicago Stadium and playing Michael Jordan in his prime. They just can't win those games. And bad teams can't win over an entire season in the NBA or really in the NFL. But in baseball, all sorts of little things happen and teams come from nowhere. Well, the Padres aren't coming from nowhere because they were really good last year. They got significantly better with Darvish and Snell in the rotation. They upgraded a couple other places. They play the Dodgers 19 times. So yes, I think they have a chance to beat the Dodgers in the division, but I'm saying the Dodgers are the best team and they're going to win that division.
So another really big personnel change happened in the NL Central because the Cardinals traded for Nolan Arenado, the superstar third baseman from the Rockies. And I know you appreciate infield defense, Tim, and you appreciate all of the talents that a guy like that has. Does he make that team the team to beat in the NL Central on his own? How is this all shaken out to you?
Yeah, I think he does. And let's be clear, this is not a good division. Even though four teams made the playoffs last year, the Reds have gone backwards. The Brewers, who did not spend one day above 500 last year and made the playoffs, I think they're a little bit better, not significantly better. And the Cubs have taken a step backwards also, trading Darvish, and they're going in another direction. So I think almost by default, that makes the Cardinals the best team in the Central. But Nolan Arenado is, he's a tremendous player. He is an acrobat, and he's a he's a dirtbag when it comes to working out. One of his coaches told me at Tulsa, he used to come up to him all the time and say, can we please take extra ground balls, please? And the coach finally told him one day, Nolan, it's 111 degrees outside. We are not taking extra grounders. And Arenado said, please, just 10 minutes. 10 minutes in 111 degrees for extra infield. That's who he is, and that's what he brings to the Cardinals.
I want your on-the-record predictions, Tim, here, as we wind down. So for the Cy Young, who is at the top of your mind?
All right. Well, I was just trying not to go completely chalk, but in the American League, I took Gerrit Cole, who's never won a Cy Young. He's one of the best pitchers of all time, never to win a Cy Young, with a couple of years he's had recently. And in the National League, I went with Walker Buehler, maybe because the last thing I saw was him throwing four-seam fastballs to the Rays, who had zero chance of hitting him in the postseason. He's one of the great postseason pitchers we've ever seen. He's like 14 years old. It's unbelievable. So to not have Jacob deGrom in there or Bieber in there was hard to do. But the point is, there's so much great pitching today. There were many options. So I went with Cole and Buehler.
And when you put down your hypothetical, way too early MVP ballot, Tim, who are the names at the very top?
Well, Trout, I picked him for like 9 years in a row, okay? And he's won like 8 years out of nine. That's an exaggeration. Every year he's in the MVP voting because he's the best player most of us have ever seen. I saw Willie Mays play. He's not Willie Mays, but he's getting there. So I have him as the MVP, not because it's a safe pick. I think he keeps getting better every year. And Juan Soto in the National League is my MVP. I think the Nationals will be a contender. And as long as you play meaningful games, you can win the MVP. I'm not sure I've seen a hitter more advanced as far as understanding of the strike zone, plate discipline like him. Three guys, 20 years old, have hit cleanup in a World Series game. Ty Cobb, Miguel Cabrera, Juan Soto. That's the list. And he's only getting better. They just have to provide some protection for him, because if he's protected, he's the best hitter in the National League.
So, Tim, I want you to imagine the scene here, because now it is late autumn and there's a chill. And Tim Kirkjian, you are wearing some layers. You're wearing fleece, maybe. You're somewhere inside of a baseball stadium for the World Series. Who is playing?
Well, I just don't want to be in the cafeteria again. Okay, so yes, I'll be anywhere for the World Series. I think it's going to be the Dodgers and the Yankees. And again, I'm much older than you, so I grew up at a time where Dodgers, Yankees, they played a lot. And it was really cool to watch.
I heard legends, Tim. I've only heard the legends.
Yes, I think the Dodgers are going back to the World Series. I think they're that good. I think the American League has multiple candidates, but I'm going to take the Yankees because I'm betting on Tyone and Kluber are pretty good. They're bull. Penn gets great, and they hit a ton of homers, and the DJ LeMahieu's and Aaron Judge's and Luke Voit, who Stanton was described as, yeah, Voit walked in, him and all his muscles just walked through the door. That's how big and strong the Yankees are. I think they slug their way to the World Series, play the Dodgers, and the Dodgers win.
When Giancarlo Stanton compliments you on all of your muscles, I feel like that's like first paragraph of the open.
Yes. Again, it would be one thing for me to compliment on his muscles because everyone has more muscles than me. But who's got more muscles than Giancarlo Stanton? Apparently, only Luke Voit.
Tim Kirkjian, a miracle of modern science. Thank you, as always, for bringing the heat.
Thank you, Pablo. I enjoyed it.
Okay, up next, the new voice of the Chicago Cubs, Boog Sciambi, tells us all about his new gig from inside Wrigley Field.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. Being the play-by-play man for the Chicago Cubs TV broadcast is a job that feels almost papal in its importance and in its longevity. Only four announcers have ever sat in that chair. So when the job opened up this year, after the beloved Len Casper went off to call games for the crosstown White Sox, the city of Chicago waited, tensely, for white smoke to emerge from Wrigley Field. And when the Cubs wound up electing our friend and ESPN colleague John Boog-Shambi, the city celebrated the arrival of the man I consider the best voice in baseball. So after Boog called the last Cubs spring training game this week, a win over the Arizona Diamondbacks, I had to call him. Boog, where are you right now? Can you describe your surroundings for the listener?
Well, right now I am at Wrigley Field. So I'm in the back of the booth where we just finished calling a baseball game that took place in Mesa, Arizona.
So for context here, fans have not been allowed inside Wrigley for more than a year now. There were zero fans at all during the 2020 season. They're about to be back on Thursday for opening day. Boog, what's the energy around your new office, around this historic ballpark, maybe even around the city on your commute to work? What's it been like? How does it feel?
I think people are excited to get a chance to go back to seeing baseball games. Look, Chicago in the summer is a pretty special place, and I think that the Cubs are pretty well intertwined with that idea. Even the players have said as much, that they can't wait to have fans back in the stands when we've interviewed them during games.
So I'm excited for you, man. Full disclosure here, you're my friend. You went to the same high school as me. Like, I root for you. And the job you have, Boog, it's an institution. The list of play-by-play guys who've had your job, Boog, it goes Jack Brickhouse, Harry Carey, Chip Carey, Len Casper, and you. As the new guy, how does this all feel?
Yeah, it's all the things. It's humbling. It's flattering. You know, I'm aware of the history in the seat. It's funny. I've done easily 100 games in this ballpark, and I've always felt connected to it. And it's blue skies and gorgeous, and it's Wrigley Field. And I go and take a picture from home plate just because, hey, look, isn't this cool? It's Wrigley Field. New office, who dis, right?
Boog, you're also friends, old friends, with Cubs manager David Ross. You work together at ESPN. Has there been rookie hazing? How is he treating you now that you guys are under the same umbrella?
It's funny, too, because I met David Ross in 2008 when he was a backup catcher with the Braves, 8 or 9. But so I've known him for a long time. My guess is there will be some hazing, that type of thing. We had Anthony Rizzo mic'd up the other day, and it was a two-way, so he had an earpiece. And so we were having a great time. And so at a certain point when he's coming up to hit, he's standing at the top step of the dugout, and he's standing next to Rossi. And I said, does Rossi know you're mic'd up? And Rizzo turns to David and says, Boog wants to know if you knew that I was mic'd up. And Rossi just pulls his mask down and just goes, tell Boog I know everything. And then just puts his mask back up. That was it.
Boog, you referenced some of the frustrations around trying to do your job during COVID. The last time I saw you calling a game, I think, was when you were in Central Park, like just calling a game of wiffle ball that random strangers were playing.
That's right.
One out, man at second. Right-hander delivers. That one driven to center. The wind knocks it down, and the grab is made. And there's two away.
So I feel like there's a level of eagerness for you specifically to get to call games in person with fans that's pretty potent at this point.
Yeah, it's true. All of it. And just to see people and, I don't know. I just feel like one of my strengths is being around the players and connecting and getting to know them and having them, you know, share their story and then translating that on the air. I love that part of it. It's so much fun. It's fun to stand around the batting cage and say to Chris Bryant, how many bats do you take out to BP? And he says, I don't know, three. And I say, well, which one do you, how do you decide which one you're going to use? He said, whatever one's loudest. All that type of stuff that you're connecting with people is the, you know, the stuff that I really miss. And then as far as the fans, the energy that fans supply, I think that even fans probably would acknowledge that not having full house of fans affects the viewing experience. I think that one of the most special components to watching athletes perform is how do they respond to the passion of the fans. All of that is part of the beauty of it.
If you're telling me that a Coliseum full of people booing you doesn't make a difference at all, I just, at some point we have to indulge that reality. And the Chicago Tribune, Boog, I want to bring this up now, has already reported that you do not believe in the boogeyman. You will call a no-hitter as you see it, which is to say you will literally say that a no-hitter is happening or any other historic milestone that people don't want you to jinx. So how dangerous a decision is the one that you've already committed to?
Well, what's funny is that literally my first game as a Cubs broadcaster, it was only a 7-inning game, but we're getting into the later stages. And I'm like, really? We're going to do this? This is really happening? Okay. So it's a combined no-hitter with one out in the seventh. I basically just had to sit there and say, okay, so here's me, how I do this. I'm going to say no-hitter, and then I'm going to say it again, and then I'm going to say it again. If it was good enough for Vin Scully, it's good enough for me. It's something I feel passionate about. And my gosh, if I had the ability to affect the outcome with what was taking place on the field by what I say, I would be in Vegas right now.
What are you most excited about this Cubs season that we have around the corner?
I think the team will be pretty decent. And I think that in the division, they should have a chance to compete for the division. They have three key players that are going to be free agents right now in Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo. There's a lot of star power to this team. Jock Peterson was a big part of the Dodger team that won last year. He had 8 homers in spring training. You know, Hayward is a known name. Bryant finished first for Rookie of the Year, first for MVP the following year. Baez was a runner-up in the MVP. They've got a lot of talent. I think for me, selfishly, I'm just looking forward to sitting in that seat on Thursday and being the home broadcaster in this park for these fans.
Do you practice, Boog? Are you practicing saying Cubs win to the mirror? Is that part of your method here? How does the preparation look like as Thursday's right around the corner?
Until the last few days, I hadn't really contemplated whether I would even say it. And I think I probably will. But I'm sure that there will be some funny thoughts that'll run through my head and stupid, silly things that'll run through my head where, I just part of the way I do it is that I'm transparent about all of my, moronic thoughts. So I'll provide them all to the listening audience.
Boog Xiaombi, the latest big name in the Chicago Cubs organization, the best voice in baseball, the pride of Regis High School. Thank you for doing this, man.
Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.